was that too. I'm sorry. Anyway, we are getting ready to proceed with the fourth case on our calendar for oral argument, and that is State of Minnesota versus John Weissman. Counsel, you do notice our courtroom looks a little different. We have Judge Frisch appearing remotely, but up until the last 5 minutes of the prior argument, everything was going swimmingly, and she will be participating in the argument as if she were here in the courtroom with us. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal, should you choose to use it. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument. And the podium, which contains the lighting, in the middle can go up and down, and if you're more comfortable using the podium closer to your desk, that is fine as well. You'll be picked up both ways. I guess the last item is just to be mindful of Judge Frisch, she will be asking questions, and you may get that from her body language on the video if it comes to that. So with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I will keep my eyes on the owl.
Can I take a minute to set this podium up before my timer starts?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Let's see. May it please the court, my name is Ryan Pasiga, and I represent the appellant, John Weissman. And good afternoon, or good morning to counsel as well. I was trial counsel in this case, and I stand before this court sincerely and solemnly concerned that we may have a wrongful conviction here. And I mean that. And so this was a case of circumstantial evidence. And as the court knows, this court applies a heightened scrutiny to cases where there's a conviction based on circumstantial evidence. The court does not defer to the jury's choices on reasonable inferences, but rather it will reverse a conviction based on circumstantial evidence only if the evidence supports a reasonable inference other than guilt. And while the appellant may not rely on mere conjecture or speculation, but must instead point to specific evidence on the record that is consistent with innocence. And these are the concerns I have in taking the case and the facts that were presented to the jury here and those inferences. Indeed, Mr. Weissman was home with his wife, Angel, earlier that day. Did he have an opportunity to kill her in the home before he left to pick up his son from school? Yes. But did someone else have an opportunity to come into the home that was open at two access points during the 1 hour that he was gone and murder Angel Weissman that day? Yes. Did anybody recall?
Mr. Pasiga, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that is, I think, the key issue here, and that is, I read your closing argument, I read the transcript. It was very well presented that there may have been an alternate perpetrator here, opportunity for a burglary to have occurred, and that was presented to the jury based on all of this evidence and rejected by the jury. So when that happens, we don't give any deference to this alternate theory. We view the evidence in light most favorable to the verdict. So what is the, so how do we get over that on review here?
Thank you, Your Honor. And so that was really, I think, Al-Nasir is our tutor in this case, and it's progeny, and that was a heck of a saga of a case it was. But that gives us instruction about exactly what to do here. And when reviewing the sufficiency of the circumstantial evidence, this court's first task is to identify the circumstances proved. And then in identifying the circumstances proved, the court does defer, consistent with your standard of review, to the jury's acceptance of the proof of these circumstances and rejection of the evidence in the record that conflicted with the circumstances proved by the state. But then this court examines independently the reasonableness of all inferences that might be drawn from the circumstances proved, and here's, I think, what you're asking about, including inferences consistent with rational hypotheses other than guilt. In assessing the inferences, you give no different deference to the fact finder's choice between reasonable inferences. And that's where you can start anew. There's no deference to their choices, Judge Frisch, on the reasonable inferences drawn by the jury. In assessing these inferences drawn from the circumstances proved, the inquiry is not simply whether the inferences leading to guilt are reasonable. Although that must be true in order to convict, it must also be true that there are no other reasonable, rational inferences that are inconsistent with guilt. And that's what we think the jury failed to do. This is because if any one or more circumstances found proved are inconsistent with guilt or consistent with innocence, then a reasonable doubt to guilt arises. And otherwise, we wouldn't be in any circumstantial case. This court would be bound by the jury's verdict. Well, they've considered circumstantial evidence, they've considered the points that the defense counsel has made, and they've rejected that, and you wouldn't be able to ever reverse a conviction on circumstantial evidence otherwise. But any time, I mean, we present our cases both on cross-examination, if you will, and then sometimes by presenting a defense case. But you do have that opportunity, and I've put before you the black letter law that I believe applies and gives you that opportunity and instruction about what to do in this particular situation. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
It does, and let me ask a different question. Mr. Vasiga, we have a situation here where there's something happened between 2:54 p.m. and 4 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. And the argument that you posited to the jury is that some unknown person came into this cul-de-sac, entered the house, was surprised to see Mrs. in the kitchen and put 3 bullets in her and killed her. And what are the circumstances prove beyond conjecture, beyond speculation, that that is what happened?
Well, she's dead, and there's 3 bullets in her, and Mr. Wiseman was gone for a little over an hour. So that is what it is. We don't know if this was a burglar coming in there or a home invader. I mean, there was a garage door wide open. This is during times of COVID when a lot of people are home. And in fact, that particular area, law enforcement had 2 other break-ins to home, and there are other cases of home invasions where people are home and burglars are burglarizing homes where people are home, which then becomes a robbery, of course.
But the fact that there had been other burglaries in the neighborhood, that's not a circumstance proved. That wouldn't be consistent with guilt, right? And so why would we consider that in our circumstantial evidence review of this case?
The point is that they happened. There was opportunity there. And we don't know if this was a home invasion. We don't know if this was someone who wanted Angel Wiseman dead or perhaps John and Angel Wiseman dead. They were wealthy people. We just don't know, but we can't be simply foreclosed from looking at the presumption of innocence because we can't say this is an exact person who did it. There was an opportunity for somebody else to do it, and applying the presumption of innocence and the lack of other evidence in terms of the circumstantial evidence, I think that proves to an inference of guilt, or I mean innocence here. Because in this case, what we have other facts just besides what we know, but rather what we don't know, and that's this. She was murdered by a gun. Now, the government or the state here says, well, Mr. Wiseman had an article where he looked up what a Glock gun is, which is an Austrian-made gun. This gun, as forensics shows, was a high-point firearm, not a Glock. So it was a high-point firearm, and we don't have any evidence of any ownership or possession of a gun by Mr. Wiseman. No ammunition found in the house. You know, we have spent casings, but no ammunition. No ammunition boxes. No box for purchase of a gun. No instruction manual. No warranty registration. No gun safe. No gun cleaning kit. I mean, simply nothing. No gun found on Mr. Wiseman. Nothing in his vehicle.
You've got gunshot residue.
We certainly do.
And in his car.
That's right, we do. And we have gunshot residue, but if you looked at the testimony from Lacey Robb, the GSR expert, you've learned that gunshot residue never expires. It does not biodegrade. She can't say whether the gunshot residue in the vehicle is the same gunshot residue that was in the house.
Right, but again, are these the circumstances proved? I mean, I always have a question. We look at the evidence that supports the verdict of guilt. Mm-hmm. Or evidence offered by the state that's not inconsistent. I mean, it seems like what you're pointing to are all cross-examination defense arguments that were made at trial for good reason, mm-hmm. good arguments that the jury mm-hmm. didn't accept. So how is that part of the circumstances that we are to look at in evaluating the sufficiency of the evidence?
Well, I think the circumstances that we also have proved are the fact that Adrian Wiseman was alone at home. In other words, Mr. Wiseman was gone for 1 hour. That is a circumstance proved, right? I believe it is. It's a circumstance proved. Nobody controverted that. We have a circumstance proved that no firearm was found with Mr. Wiseman. We have a circumstance proved that despite having access to all of Mr. Wiseman's financial records and internet records, there's no record of any purchase of a firearm or ammunition or anything else by Mr. Wiseman. We have a circumstance proved that the garage door was wide open and anybody could walk into the home and that there was no forced entry. We have a circumstance proved that the front door of the house was ajar, not the storm door, the actual big door, and that people could walk in and out of that. We have a circumstance proved that Mr. Wiseman was at McDonald's and then the school to pick up his son. And we have a circumstance proved that the rice cooker, if you look at the time on what that evidence came out, and this was really intriguing, and the government did not want to talk about this in the trial or in their appellate brief. The timing on this rice cooker, the detectives took a picture of it, and it showed a 2-hour warming period. That's how long the rice had been warming at the time that they took a picture of the rice cooker. It's digitally timed. We extrapolated back in front of the jury the timing on that. That got to the rice cooker was activated sometime between about 3:40 and 3:50 p.m. She was alive then at that time, that would be the inference. That's a circumstance proved, the timing on the rice cooker. We have a circumstance proved that a noise activation came. It had that, but there was no evidence that was entered that the delay function was ever entered on the rice cooker that day. I mean, it's concerning. We just don't know. And this was objected over hearsay, but the body was warm to the touch when law enforcement touched the body. And that was in the medical examiner's report because a detective was told about that. Now, granted, that wasn't allowed in over hearsay, but that was very concerning. It's a warm body when law enforcement's encountering it. So that's what I'm struggling with. We have these other circumstances proved that show innocence here. I mean, what can somebody do? You're all sitting in front of this courtroom respectfully right now. If you were in your chambers with somebody cleaning it an hour ago, and you've been out here for the last hour hearing arguments, and we go in later and that person is found dead with a hammer marked to their forehead, and we later find that, well, you had been to Home Depot, not that you had purchased a hammer, and that one time you had read an article about a hammer, and all of the circumstances then show, well, you must have hit that person in the head with a hammer and killed them in your chambers. Well, what else could you do to prove a negative that you hadn't? And that's kind of like, I think, what was going on with Al-Nasir. How do you prove a negative that you didn't know that you hit the victim on the side of the road that was killed changing his tire there? That case also had to deal with lack of circumstances proved. How did you know? How do you know? Prove to us you didn't know you hit a person.
But we require juries to make those findings all the time in our courtrooms.
And we
right?
do, but just like in
tell them that they are to consider circumstantial evidence.
Right, and that's true. But the burden is on the state and not Mr. Wiseman to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Wiseman knew, or in this case, killed his wife. The circumstances proved in this case, and this just comes out of Al-Nasir as well. It's a really good quote. permit a number of reasonable inferences, including inferences that support the conclusion that Al-Nasir knew that he had hit a person or a vehicle, and inferences that support the opposite conclusions, that Al-Nasir did not know that he had hit a person or a vehicle. The latter inferences are inconsistent with guilt and therefore create reasonable doubt as to Al-Nasir's guilt, and I think it's the same situation here.
And do you agree that we need to look at all of the circumstances proved and kind of as a group rather than isolating particular inference that can be drawn from a particular piece of evidence?
I do. You've got to look at the totality there, but we can't, you know, both sides once, I think in this case, want to point to, well, you're saying this, but if you look at all of these other things, and that is the situation. But just like the government and the state in its brief has pointed, they're saying, look at the totality here. Well, we got to look at the other parts here as well. The reality is that we're talking about a marriage that had some difficulty in the past. If you take a look at, it was Exhibit 633 in this trial. They were trying to say what a troubled marriage this was and all these problems, but testimony came out that their marriage had gotten better, and I think there's no better evidence than Exhibit 633 where Angel is writing, and this is recent to her death. I treasure him because he has a good heart. Meaning John Wiseman. Okay, and when we have, they try to make much of this domestic dispute in a hotel, but it was John Wiseman, and I think that was 2018. It was John Wiseman that called the police because of Angel's behavior. It was John Wiseman that said she's out of control and she's lost her temper. And then when police left, they told him to call again if there was any problems. It was John Wiseman that called and said, she hit me. And it was John Wiseman that law enforcement said was calm and peaceful during that interaction. And that's important. So they're trying to make him look like, well, they had infidelity in their marriage in the past and they had these marital problems. But there's no evidence in the case that he was the violent one here. And in fact, if there was anything about these code words with the family, that was when Angel would be getting upset about the children, not, you know, when they had to amp up the code words. About not the kids not focusing enough on their homework.
Yeah, I'm going to need to cut you off now. You can pick this up on rebuttal.
But thank you,
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Okay. Good? All right, great. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court and counsel. My name is Nicole Cornell. I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney appearing on behalf of the respondent, the state of Minnesota, in this matter. Excuse me. This case regards the execution-style murder of Angel Wiseman, who was shot 3 times in her kitchen, once while she stood and twice while she was either bent over or lying on her back on her kitchen floor. Appellant's only claim on appeal is that there is not sufficient circumstantial evidence supporting the element of identity for his second-degree murder conviction. This court should affirm because the only reasonable and rational hypothesis from the extensive circumstances proven at trial is that appellant killed his wife. With my argument time this morning, I would like to do 3 things. 1, emphasize several aspects of the standard review in this case. 2 is highlight some of the more damning evidence and circumstances proved in this case, and also provide one additional citation to the record that I did not put in my brief, but I think that would be helpful to this court. And then 3, briefly discuss and review why appellant's hypotheses do not lead to a reasonable belief of innocence based on the totality of the circumstances. So first, regarding the standard of review, the discussion has been accurate so far in that a circumstances proved at trial does not mean every circumstance as to which there may be some testimony in the case. No, it actually means only those circumstances that the jury finds proved by the evidence. And I won't belabor the point, but I think that what has been discussed so far in questions and answering has touched on that. And again, to echo Judge Frisch, that is the Chu case, the T-S-C-H-E-U, which I believe is the Chu case that Judge Frisch was referring to previously. And again, I'll emphasize possibilities of innocence do not warrant reversal so long as the totality of the circumstances proved lead only to reasonable and rational hypotheses of guilt and not of innocence.
Counsel,
yes.
The circumstances, I believe it's circumstances proved, but Helen didn't mention it, so maybe I'm wrong. But worries me is this 303 basement security alert going off. I mean, so why isn't that consistent with the theory, a hypothesis, that somebody else came in and murdered her?
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up, Your Honor. That is precisely the citations to the record that I would like to provide to the court right now. I included in my single-spaced extensive list of circumstances proved that the particular camera that picked up the 303 alert, the camera that was found in the basement mechanical room, which did alert at 303, that is a circumstance proved. Respondent does not deny that. However, that 303 alert could not have been three gunshots into Angel Wiseman's body. And if for, at first, can I please provide the citation to the record? If the bench will allow. I'm looking at the transcript from October 11, 2021. At page 102, where the testimony first is that multiple sounds in a row are capable of being recorded by the camera. However, on pages of the same dated transcript, October 11th, 2021, pages 138 to 139, sound can be captured in 1 minute increments and even captured in less than 1 minute increments, which means that you would receive multiple emails within 1 minute, if that makes sense. And the specific exhibits that regard this are exhibits 751 and 772. 772 is the massive list of all the alerts from the DIY camera. And what that shows is there are multiple emails from the same timestamp, which means that the DIY camera would have picked up several sounds and would have alerted to appellant's email three gunshots. The other evidence presented at trial and summed in the prosecutor's closing argument also lists other reasons why the 303 alert on the DIY camera in the mechanical room could not have been gunshots. And I do outline that in my brief. Does that sufficiently answer your question, Your Honor? Yes, but thank you for bringing that up. That was the first agenda item with regard to the evidence. But if I could just highlight a few other pieces of important evidence that respondent just must must highlight for the court. Those pieces of evidence include the entirety of the timeline. There's been several discussions so far at oral argument today about opportunity. To be clear, the last time Angel's phone was used was 2:36 p.m. or 2:34 p.m. There is some time discrepancy minute by minute in the time evidence, which I'm sure the bench has reviewed the evidence so far. But appellant did have the opportunity to and motive to kill Angel Wiseman in this case. I must highlight as well, appellant brought up this morning that evidence of a volatile marriage was essentially stale in this case, but that is not true. As the record shows, they were fighting up until just before the murder, including that Angel Wiseman, the victim in this case, would have strongly preferred and was very vocal that appellant should not contact his former love interest and the mother of his third child, and also other people in the Wiseman family shouldn't either contact that third child or post social media postings. There's threats back and forth. There certainly was a volatile marriage, even up to the day that Angel Wiseman was murdered. Additionally, appellant cannot ignore the GSR evidence in this case or the 430 unaccounted for steps at pickup. Appellant was unable to address that evidence at trial and in his brief to the court today. So the timeline, the motive, the GSR, the 430 unaccounted for steps, in addition to the rest of the totality of the circumstances proved at trial, and they are extensive. It does not leave open the reasonable or rational hypothesis that some unknown and some unwitnessed burglar came into the home farthest set back in the subdivision, decided to burgle, and then also execution-style murder Angel Wiseman in her kitchen in the middle of the day. That is not reasonable, that is not rational, and this court should affirm based on the totality of the circumstances proved. In addition, one last thing on the circumstances proved and the no rational, reasonable hypothesis analysis is I would point to the extensive impeachment that came out on cross-examination of defense witnesses and of also Mr. Atherton Wiseman. Any theories regarding the GSR that the reg had GSR on it because appellant's son sometimes used the car, sometimes wiped his hands on the reg, that before he did that, sometimes he worked with a male that sometimes shot guns and sometimes they worked in close proximity such that this unknown person who works with appellant's son may have transferred some GSR onto the reg when Angel Wiseman was shot and killed moments before. That is unreasonable. That is not rational. That is certainly not something that can point to appellant's innocence in this case. And I'll also emphasize the impeachment of Mr. Atherton Wiseman that as soon as he learned through defense counsel that GSR was important in this case, he thought, oh, maybe I put GSR on there from fireworks. That was impeached at trial. Oh, maybe it was my friend at work that gave me GSR. I put GSR on the green rag. That was also impeached at trial. So that is something to emphasize to this court, what is impeached, what was rejected by the jury, what cannot be considered as a circumstance proved. But I won't belabor that point. I would have touched on the rice cooker, but I believe Judge Frisch also noted that there is a delay function. There's no circumstance proved about the rice cooker that this court should consider in any meaningful. I don't see how that's helpful one way or the other for this court. So in sum, possibilities of innocence do not warrant reversal in this case, so long as the evidence taken as a whole, which there was a month-long trial of evidence. So taking all that as a whole, theories of innocence are just unreasonable. Appellant killed Angel Wiseman, and this court should affirm.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Castigo, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the DIY camera, although it can show alerts multiple within a minute, there's no evidence whatsoever that it can do so within seconds. There's been nothing there. And if there are three shots into somebody, they can happen within seconds. We know this was a semi-automatic firearm as opposed to a revolver, and semi-automatic guns are fast, and that's because the cartridges were ejected on the floor. Revolvers keep their cartridge casings. These were rejected, so we know it was a semi-automatic firearm. With respect to this idea that they were in this huge fight that led to John Wiseman to decide to murder his wife after this phone call, law enforcement talked to the other person that was on the phone with Angel during that business call, and that's in the record, and that person related that Angel was completely normal during that phone call. No distress, no stress, nothing. There was no evidence that the two of these were having a fight that while she's on the phone and then somehow have this massive blowout fight right before Mr. Wiseman decides that he's going to pick up his child. And I think, if anything, with respect to fighting, and the counsel talked about this idea with Angel being upset about Jenny, or sometimes she's called Virginia Street in the record here, this was this argument between Angel and Virginia Street, where Virginia Street told Angel, "You don't know who I am, I'll skin you alive. I can't, you come down here and meet me if you want." This was a fight between the two of them. Mr. Wiseman wasn't involved in that fight. With respect to the GSR evidence, I ask you to take a real careful look. And I know there's a lot of transcripts in this case, but if you really examine the testimony of Lacey Robb, the GSR expert in this case, and you look at the way that their lab handles GSR evidence and the precautions that they take to make sure there is no contamination or transfer. And you look at what she says about how GSR exists and everything, you're going to find the following. GSR never biodegrades. It could be here in this room from 75 years ago, for example. It doesn't go away. GSR transfers easily. GSR can't be compared and say, well, this GSR that was in the kitchen is the same GSR that was on the rag. GSR exists in a plume, and Lacey Robb was talking about the fact that there could be thousands of particles in this crime scene in the kitchen that could later transfer to Mr. Wiseman when he was giving CPR, and that can explain why it was on his sleeves. Absolutely. I mean, Mr. Wiseman was giving CPR when law enforcement came in on this situation after he had called 911.
You have to assume, though, that the jury decided that, in fact, it did not transfer while he was performing CPR. I mean, isn't that part of our standard review, that that wouldn't, the possibility of transfer is not a circumstance proved because it's not consistent with the finding of guilt, is it?
I think it is a circumstance. I'm sorry. I think it is a circumstance proved.
Hold on one second. Can you hear us, Judge Frisch?
I can't. I got a recording stopped.
So did I. I just want to make sure we still have. Okay, perfect. All right.
I think the circumstance proved is that GSR does indeed transfer. That is the circumstance proved. And the circumstance proved is also that you can't tell whether the GSR that's on the rag is the same GSR that was in the kitchen, or that it belonged to whatever firearm fired that day, this high point. I do believe that is a circumstance proved in the case. Nobody was arguing about that. And in fact, the fact that nobody could say that the GSR on the rag is the same GSR that was in the kitchen that day. Those are all circumstances proved. The fact is that nobody can say this GSR is, and they can't date the GSR either. Those are all circumstances proved, and I think that they go just as much to innocence as they do to guilt. One inference is, yeah, the GSR is transferred. Mr. Wiseman shot the gun, he got GSR on him, and he transferred it to the rag by wiping his hands or whatever. That can be a circumstance proven. That's a rational inference here. But another rational inference is that law enforcement, while they were in the scene, had GSR on them and transferred it to the rag, or that his son Atherton or anybody else could have transferred GSR, and it's not the same GSR from that day, we just don't know. And the other circumstance proved is that GSR can indeed transfer to Mr. Wiseman's sleeves when he was performing CSR or CPR. That is a circumstance proved as well. He performed CPR in a crime scene that had a lot of GSR on it, and he was touching the victim where GSR would be, and that can transfer to his clothing. So I do think that's a circumstance proved as well. One hypothesis, it transferred because he shot her. Another hypothesis, this GSR transferred because it was moved from, people were coming in and out of a crime scene and then handling evidence that they were already in a contaminated crime scene from. That's the concern, Your Honor. I think my time is up.
All right.
Thank you for your time and consideration today.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Mm-hmm.